There are moments when someone you love, your child, your partner, anyone close, acts in a way that makes you feel unseen, not attacked, not rejected, just quietly dismissed. It's a small wound, but it reaches a deep place, and in that tiny moment, two paths open: the instinct to react and the chance to lead. Most people choose the first path without even realizing it. They raise their voice, repeat themselves, or try to force attention because inside something feels threatened. But what if those moments aren't actually about disrespect, but about emotional habits, unspoken tension, or simply a nervous system overloaded by life? What if your response could change the entire direction of the relationship? Not by force, but by presence. When you start to understand this, you stop seeing conflict as an attack and start seeing it as information, a mirror, a signal. Your calm becomes more than a personality trait. It becomes a form of guidance, and your presence, steady, grounded, and intentional, becomes the place where respect begins to take shape. Today, we explore that shift, not how to control others, but how to influence the space between you, the space where relationships are won or lost. Control your reactions. When someone ignores you or challenges your authority, the first thing that reacts is not your mind, it's your body. A tightening in the chest, a small jolt of heat, a sense that something is slipping out of your hands. Most people assume this feeling is a signal to act, to correct, to regain control. But if you pay attention closely, you'll notice something subtle. The feeling is actually asking you to pause, not push. Because the moment you react fast, you reinforce the idea that your emotional state depends on their behavior. And once you give someone that power, child or adult, you lose the influence you're trying to build. Staying calm is not about suppressing emotion, it's about protecting your clarity. Clarity lets you see the situation for what it is, not an attack, but a moment that needs direction. When you breathe before responding, when you delay your reaction just a little, something powerful happens. The emotional fog clears, and you begin to see the real reason behind the behavior. Sometimes it's stress. Sometimes it's insecurity. Sometimes it's distraction. And sometimes, yes, it's a boundary being tested. But you can't see any of that if your reaction is louder than your awareness. Children especially learn from what rises in your face before any word leaves your mouth. Adults, too. Your energy becomes the model for how the moment will unfold. If you break, they push. If you explode, they defend. But if you stay steady, calm voice, relaxed posture, eyes that show presence instead of panic, you change the emotional gravity of the moment. You communicate without saying it. I am not controlled by this. I respond, I don't react. When you control your reaction, you don't reward the behavior emotionally. You don't make ignoring you work. Instead, you make calm the center of gravity, and people, especially children, naturally align themselves to the energy that feels most stable. That stability teaches more respect than any lecture. The moment you hold your reaction, you create space, and in that space, you become the one leading the interaction. Understand without giving in. When someone ignores you or pushes back against your authority, the natural instinct is to assume defiance, disrespect, or a lack of appreciation. But human behavior is rarely that simple. Beneath the surface of every reaction, especially a negative one, there is almost always something unspoken: overwhelm, fear, frustration, confusion, or even a need for connection that the person doesn't know how to express. And when you start to see this, everything about the moment changes. You stop taking the behavior personally. you stop collapsing into the emotional story your mind tries to build. Instead, you begin to observe. And observation, more than authority, is what gives you real influence. Understanding someone doesn't mean you agree with them, and it definitely doesn't mean you surrender your boundaries. It simply means you are willing to look beyond the behavior to see the human being behind it. When a child refuses to listen, there is often a reason they can't articulate. When an adult pulls away or shuts down, they are protecting a part of themselves they don't know how to talk about. And when you meet that moment with curiosity instead of confrontation, you create a space where tension begins to soften and where authentic communication can appear. This is the part many people misunderstand. Empathy is not weakness. Empathy is strategy. Empathy allows you to decode the moment instead of reacting to the surface of it. If you look closely, you'll always notice subtle clues. The shift in their eyes, the tone in their voice, the tension in their shoulders, the silence that lasts a little too long. These are signals, and once you learn to read them, you stop fighting the wrong battles. Instead of arguing with the behavior, you start understanding the need beneath it. And needs, unlike disrespect, can be addressed. But understanding without giving in requires a balance that takes practice. You're not there to justify harmful behavior. You're not there to excuse it. You're simply saying, "I see something is happening inside you, but I'm not losing myself in the process." This creates a powerful dynamic. The other person feels recognized, something every human being longs for, yet they also feel the firmness of your presence. No collapse, no surrender, just steady awareness. And that awareness changes people far more effectively than force. When someone feels understood without you abandoning your boundary, they begin to regulate themselves. They begin to trust the space. They begin to soften their defenses because you didn't attack theirs. And practically, this shift gives you leverage. When you understand the root, fatigue, stress, insecurity, you can respond to the real issue instead of reacting to the symptom. You can speak to the emotion, not the explosion. And the moment you do that, the behavior begins to lose its power. You're no longer caught inside the storm. You're standing outside of it, guiding the person back to clarity. This is the quiet influence people never forget. The feeling of being seen without being allowed to cross the line. The feeling of being understood without being obeyed. The feeling of facing someone who leads with awareness, not pressure. Understanding gives you insight. Not giving in gives you strength. Together, they give you control over the moment in a way force never will. Set clear boundaries. There comes a moment in every relationship, especially with children, when understanding alone is not enough. Compassion opens the door, but boundaries hold the structure. Without boundaries, your calm can be mistaken for passivity, your empathy for permission, your silence for surrender. And this is where many people unintentionally lose their influence. They understand too much, forgive too quickly, and forget to draw the line that teaches respect. But healthy boundaries don't restrict connection. They protect it. They prevent resentment from growing in the dark and keep relationships from drifting into patterns that drain both sides. A boundary is not a threat. It is not anger disguised as instruction. A boundary is clarity expressed with calm. It says, "I care about this relationship, and this is what I need to keep it healthy." Children respond to this clarity more than anything else. Adults do too. Because underneath every act of resistance, there is an unconscious question. How far can I go before the structure collapses? How steady is the person in front of me? And your boundary answers that question without a single argument. But setting a boundary requires emotional maturity. It means speaking firmly without hostility, clearly without explanation overload, confidently without demanding compliance. Something like, "I will talk when you're ready to listen," or "I don't allow disrespect in this space," or "If you choose this behavior, here is what follows." Simple, steady, consistent, no guilt, no justification, no emotional turbulence. When boundaries come from a grounded place, they teach more than any discipline technique ever could. They communicate that your self-respect is not negotiable. The surprising truth is this: people don't resist boundaries because they are unfair. They resist boundaries because they are unfamiliar, especially children, especially those who have learned that emotional escalation can shift your attention or break your stability. But once they see that your boundary is steady, not rigid, not harsh, just consistent, they begin to relax into the structure you create. The tension decreases, the pushback softens, because now there is a clear map of what is acceptable, and clarity brings safety. Boundaries are also a form of modeling. You are teaching the people around you how to protect their own energy by watching how you protect yours. You're showing them how to say no without fear, how to stand firm without cruelty, how to maintain dignity even when emotions rise. And this may become one of the most valuable lessons you ever offer, not through words, but through the calm authority you embody. And here is the practical shift. A boundary is not about controlling the other person. It is about controlling what you will or will not participate in. That's why boundaries create freedom instead of conflict. They allow you to stay open-hearted without becoming unprotected. When you express a boundary with clarity and calm, you do more than correct behavior. You elevate the entire emotional tone of the relationship. You create an environment where respect grows naturally, not because it was demanded, but because it was modeled and reinforced with consistency. And in that respectful space, connection becomes possible again. Be the example you want to see. There is a quiet truth about influence that many people overlook. Others learn far more from your behavior than from your instructions. A child watches the micro expressions on your face long before they process the words you speak. An adult absorbs your tone before they absorb your reasoning. Human beings by nature imitate emotional energy, not logic. And this is why being the example is not a motivational phrase. It is the foundation of real leadership. When you ask someone to listen while you interrupt them, you're not teaching listening. When you demand calm while your voice shakes with frustration, you're not teaching self-control. When you expect respect while your own behavior becomes sharp or reactive, you're not teaching boundaries, you're teaching inconsistency. And inconsistency confuses people far more than firmness ever will. The most powerful correction you will ever offer is the one you demonstrate, not the one you explain. Being the example doesn't mean being perfect. It means being congruent, your actions matching your expectations. If you want honesty, model honesty. If you want calm, embody calm. If you want accountability, practice accountability yourself. Every moment you show the behavior you hope to inspire, you are building a bridge that words alone could never build. Children especially lean into the emotional truth of what they observe. They can sense authenticity instantly, and they respond to it with a kind of trust that cannot be demanded. There is something almost magnetic about a person who practices what they teach. The room changes when they enter. The tone of conversations softens. Conflict de-escalates. People feel safer because they know exactly who they are dealing with. Someone who does not collapse under pressure. someone whose values do not shift with every emotional wave. And whether you realize it or not, this steadiness becomes a blueprint for the people around you. They learn how to regulate themselves by watching how you regulate yourself. They learn how to apologize when they see you apologize. They learn resilience when they see you breathe instead of breaking. But here is the deeper truth. Being the example transforms you first. Every time you choose steadiness over reactivity, you strengthen a part of your identity that cannot be manipulated by someone else's mood. Every time you choose clarity over chaos, you reinforce the message that your internal world matters and that you are the guardian of it. This inner shift becomes visible externally. People naturally begin adjusting their tone, their behavior, their expectations, because your example silently communicates the emotional standard of the relationship. And practically, this changes the dynamic more effectively than any rule or consequence. A child who sees calm during chaos slowly internalizes calm as a natural response. A partner who sees respect offered consistently begins to offer respect back. A friend who watches you set boundaries without anger starts setting their own. You are teaching emotional maturity simply by living it. When you embody the behavior you wish to receive, you stop chasing change in others. You become the reference point, the grounded, steady presence that influences the entire space around you. And people respond not because they were told, but because they were shown. Step outside the conflict. Every conflict has a center, a place where emotions spiral, reactions collide, and logic disappears. Most people step directly into that center without realizing it. They get pulled into the tension, the raised voices, the defensiveness, the urgency to win or correct or be heard. And the moment you enter that emotional center, you lose perspective. You stop seeing the person in front of you and start seeing only the problem. You stop choosing your response and start reacting to their reaction. Conflict becomes a loop, and loops don't end. They only escalate. But there is another way. Instead of stepping into the conflict, you can step outside of it. Not in avoidance, not in indifference, but in awareness. This means creating a small emotional distance between the moment and your identity. You're not the attack. You're not the disrespect. You're not the behavior being displayed. You're the observer of it, the interpreter of it, the leader standing one step back, where clarity still exists. When you step outside the conflict, you reclaim your power instantly. The emotional intensity loses its grip on you. You're no longer trying to win. You're trying to understand. You're no longer trying to defend. You're trying to guide. And guidance is impossible from inside the storm. It only happens from the calm ground just beyond it. This shift is practical and deeply psychological at the same time. When someone is emotionally activated, child or adult, their brain goes into survival mode. Logic shuts down. Listening shuts down. Empathy shuts down. If you meet that state with your own emotional activation, you create two people in survival mode, and no progress can happen there. But when you step outside the conflict, you introduce a regulated nervous system into the space. And a regulated nervous system calms the dysregulated one. This is neuroscience, not philosophy. Imagine saying with steady eyes and a grounded tone, "We'll talk when we're both calm," or "I won't continue this conversation like this." You are not withdrawing love, you are withdrawing from chaos. And that distinction is everything. It teaches the other person that conflict does not control the rhythm of your presence. It teaches them that escalation doesn't earn attention. It teaches them that you choose the terms of interaction, not the heat of the moment. And here is the subtle magic. When you step outside the conflict, the other person is forced to face themselves without using you as the emotional target. Their behavior echoes back to them. Their tone becomes recognizable. Their choices become visible. This is when accountability begins, not through force, but through reflection. Stepping outside the conflict does not disconnect you from the relationship. It reconnects you to your clarity, so you can return to the relationship with intention instead of reactivity. It is the quiet act of self-respect that creates space for respect to flow back. And in that space, conflict stops being a battlefield and becomes a doorway to understanding, correction, and growth. Give them space to reflect. After the tension fades, after the moment of disrespect or resistance has passed, most people rush toward resolution. They push for explanations, apologies, promises to do better, or immediate change. But emotional growth, real growth, doesn't happen under pressure. It happens in the quiet space after the moment, when the nervous system settles and the mind starts to process what truly occurred. And this is why giving someone space to reflect is not a passive choice. It's a strategic one. Reflection requires oxygen. It requires distance from the intensity that clouded judgment. When you step back and allow space, you are not letting the behavior slide. You are giving the other person the opportunity to understand themselves without feeling cornered. Children especially need this space, because their emotional world moves quickly, but their understanding moves slowly. Adults need it too, though they rarely admit it. We all need time to turn the moment over in our minds, to notice the discomfort that lingers, to realize we crossed a line or acted from fear or frustration. When you give space, you shift the power dynamic in a way that encourages accountability instead of defensiveness. If you demand an apology immediately, you get compliance, not insight. If you force a conversation while emotions are still active, you get resistance, not understanding. But if you allow silence to do its work, reflection begins naturally. A child might rethink the tone they used. A partner might replay how the conversation shifted. An adult might notice their own inconsistency. The space you create becomes a mirror, and people grow by looking into mirrors, not by being pushed into explanations they're not ready to give. This practice also teaches an essential lesson. Respect is not only about how you behave toward others, it's about how you treat yourself. By giving space, you protect your peace instead of chasing closure. You remain emotionally grounded instead of demanding validation. You become the person who leads the moment with maturity rather than reacting with urgency. And this steadiness builds a kind of trust that can't be forced. Trust that you won't overpower them emotionally. Trust that conversations happen when both people are ready. Trust that the relationship has room to breathe. And here is the deeper layer. Reflective space allows the consequences to land. Not punishment, not fear, but awareness. People learn far more from the quiet discomfort of realizing their own behavior than they do from any lecture. This is how respect takes root internally, instead of being enforced externally. The space you create after conflict is not an empty space. It is a space where growth happens, where understanding deepens, where emotional maturity begins. It is the pause that allows teaching to settle, the silence that gives insight a place to form. And when the moment comes to reconnect, the relationship is stronger because both sides return with clearer minds and softer hearts. Reinforce respect through consistency. Respect doesn't grow from a single conversation or a single correction. It grows from patterns. Human beings, especially children, pay far more attention to what repeats than to what you say once. And this is where many relationships unintentionally weaken. The boundary is clear one day, flexible the next. The tone is calm in the morning, reactive at night. The expectation is firm this week, negotiable the week after. Inconsistency creates confusion, and confusion always leads to testing. Not because the other person enjoys challenging you, but because they're trying to understand the rule of the relationship. What happens if I do this? What happens if I push here? Consistency answers those questions without conflict. It becomes the quiet foundation that teaches respect, not through force, but through predictability. When your reactions follow the same emotional rhythm, steady tone, clear boundary, calm presence, the other person learns the shape of your leadership. They know what to expect. They know the limits. They know the emotional field in which the relationship operates. And this clarity reduces friction more effectively than any punishment ever could. But consistency is not rigidity. It's alignment. It means your words, tone, expectations, and follow-through all live in the same place. If you say, "We'll talk when we're calm," but then keep talking while upset, the lesson breaks. If you say, "This behavior has a consequence," but avoid implementing it, the structure dissolves. If you say, "I don't accept disrespect," but allow it when tired or overwhelmed, the message becomes unstable. Not wrong, not unkind, just unclear. And unclear expectations always invite repeated testing. The real transformation happens when your consistency becomes part of your identity, when the people around you realize that your calm isn't occasional, it's who you are, that your boundaries aren't emotional, they're your values, that your patience isn't weakness, it's discipline. And the moment this realization settles, the resistance begins to fade, because conflict thrives in unpredictability, but respect thrives in stability. This applies deeply to children, who feel safest when the emotional world around them is structured. But it also applies to adults, partners, friends, even colleagues. People trust what they can predict. They relax around patterns they understand. And they give respect more freely when they don't have to guess who you will be today. Consistency also strengthens you internally. Every time you follow through on your word, you reinforce your self-respect. Every time you respond with the same emotional steadiness, you strengthen your inner stability. Over time, the consistency you practice externally becomes a form of grounded confidence internally. You stop questioning yourself. You stop second-guessing your responses. You stand in your identity with a kind of ease that others naturally align with. And here is the practical beauty of consistency. It makes respect the default, not the exception. It sets a tone that others naturally rise to meet. It builds a relational environment where growth is possible, because safety, clarity, and stability are already in place. When your behavior becomes consistent, your influence becomes effortless. Encourage responsibility, not obedience. There is a subtle but powerful distinction between getting someone to obey you and teaching them to take responsibility for their choices. Obedience is external. It's compliance driven by pressure, fear, or the desire to avoid consequences. Responsibility is internal. It's a shift in understanding, a quiet recognition that actions have meaning, that behavior carries weight, that respect is not performed for approval, but chosen from within. And this is where true growth happens. When you aim for obedience, you might get short-term control. But when you cultivate responsibility, you build long-term character. Most people lean on obedience without realizing it. They want the immediate fix. Do what I said. Listen now. Stop behaving like this. But obedience rarely leads to insight. It creates silence, not awareness. It produces compliance, not maturity. And it often sets the stage for rebellion later, because the behavior was never owned, it was only suppressed. Responsibility, however, invites the other person to think. It invites them to see themselves through the moment instead of reacting against you. Responsibility emerges when you ask better questions, not, "Why did you do that?" A question that usually triggers defense. But what do you think happened here? Or, how would you handle this differently next time? Or, what do you need to get back on track? These questions shift the mind from defensiveness to reflection. They remind the other person that they are an active participant in the relationship, not a passive subject of your authority. And here's the psychological truth. People respect what they participate in. When they feel included in the process of understanding and correcting behavior, they become more invested in improving it. Children especially respond to this shift. When you speak to them as thinkers, not as problems to be managed, they rise to that expectation. Adults do the same. Responsibility feels empowering because it places the person back in control of themselves, rather than positioning you as the enforcer they must react against. But responsibility only grows in an environment where consequences are consistent and logical, not emotional or punitive. When the consequence of an action is connected to the action itself, the lesson becomes clear without needing force. For example, if a child ignores their task, the natural consequence might be losing time for something they want later. If an adult speaks disrespectfully, the natural consequence might be a paused conversation until communication becomes respectful again. These consequences aren't punishments, they are realities. And realities teach better than lectures. What makes this powerful is the shift it also creates inside you. When you move from demanding obedience to encouraging responsibility, you no longer feel the urgency to control every moment. You stop micromanaging behavior. You stop chasing compliance. You learn to trust the process, trusting that awareness, not pressure, is what creates real change. And slowly, something beautiful happens. People begin to correct themselves. Not because you demanded it, but because they began seeing themselves through your steady, respectful guidance. Responsibility is the doorway to maturity. And when you open that door gently and consistently, the people you love eventually walk through it on their own. Practice emotional neutrality during tension. When emotions rise, voices tighten, faces shift, patience thins, the natural instinct is to mirror the energy in front of you. If they speak loudly, you respond with intensity. If they pull away, you push harder. If they act defiantly, you take it personally. But this mirroring, though instinctive, is what keeps conflict alive. Emotional neutrality is the art of breaking that cycle. It is not coldness. It is not distance. It is the steadying breath in the middle of the storm, the calm awareness that refuses to fuse your identity with the chaos unfolding in front of you. Neutrality doesn't mean you feel nothing. It means you don't let the feeling decide the direction. You become the stable center in a moment that is trying to pull you into emotional turbulence. Children especially test emotional edges, not because they want to fight, but because they're searching for the boundary that tells them, "You're still safe, I am still steady." Adults do the same, though in more subtle ways. And when you stay emotionally neutral, you provide exactly what the moment lacks. A clear mind, grounded energy, and an atmosphere where escalation cannot survive. Imagine watching the behavior instead of absorbing it. Instead of, "They're disrespecting me," Neutrality shifts the narrative to something is dysregulated here. Instead of they're attacking me, it becomes they're overwhelmed. This reframing keeps you from spiraling into defensiveness. It allows you to respond to the real issue instead of the emotional noise around it. Conflict loses much of its power the moment you stop taking it personally. This approach is deeply practical. Emotional neutrality makes your tone more consistent. Your words become clearer. You avoid saying things you'll later replay in your mind with regret. You no longer add fuel to the fire by reacting to reactions. Instead, you slow the entire moment down. Your presence becomes a signal. We're not going in that direction. And even if the other person doesn't immediately shift, they will eventually match your energy. Because escalation is exhausting, but stability is regulating. Neutrality also protects your dignity. When you remain steady in the face of disrespect or chaos, you send a message without saying anything. I don't lose myself in moments like this. And that message changes how people treat you. It raises the emotional standard of the relationship. It teaches others that your inner world is not accessible for manipulation or accidental damage. Here is the deeper beauty of emotional neutrality. It creates a space where reflection becomes possible. When you don't react, the other person is left with their own behavior echoing back at them. They begin to notice their tone, their words, their choices. Not because you pointed them out, but because you didn't engage in the emotional dance they expected. And this moment of unopposed reflection is often where the real learning happens. Emotional neutrality is not withdrawal, it is leadership. It is the quiet refusal to be pulled into a place where no growth can occur. It is the steady choice to remain grounded so the other person has a model to return to. When you become neutral during tension, you don't just avoid conflict, you transform it. Separate the behavior from the person. One of the most powerful shifts you can make in any relationship is learning to see behavior as information rather than identity. When someone speaks harshly, ignores you, shuts down, or reacts impulsively, the easy conclusion is they don't care. Or worse, this is who they are. But attaching identity to behavior creates emotional heaviness that makes moments harder than they need to be. It turns every mistake into a personal wound, every conflict into a statement about your worth, and every difficult moment into a threat to the relationship. But when you separate the behavior from the person, you create room for understanding, accountability, and change. You allow the behavior to be corrected without damaging the connection. You make it clear that the issue is what they did, not who they are. A child who hears, "You're rude," internalizes shame. A child who hears, "That behavior was disrespectful," internalizes responsibility. One message attacks the self, the other directs the self. Adults aren't any different. When people feel labeled, they defend. When they feel understood, they reflect. This distinction is at the core of healthy communication. It removes the emotional weight that turns small conflicts into emotional injuries. It keeps you grounded because instead of reacting to what feels like a personal insult, you're responding to an observable action. This tone isn't okay. Ignoring me doesn't work. We'll talk when your voice is respectful. Clear, calm, focused on the behavior, not the person's character, value, or identity. And here's where this becomes transformative. When people feel seen beyond their worst moments, they become more willing to change those moments. They feel safe enough to listen. They feel respected enough to grow. Because they're not busy defending their identity, they're simply addressing their actions. This is why separating person from behavior heals relationships while still holding high standards. It creates emotional safety and accountability at the same time. But this isn't just for them, it's for you. When you stop personalizing every disrespectful moment, you protect your internal peace. You recognize that the other person's behavior is a reflection of their emotional state, not your worth. This makes it easier to remain steady, easier to respond with clarity, easier to lead the moment instead of being pulled into its chaos. You stop feeling attacked. You stop reacting from pain. You start responding from awareness. Separating the person from the behavior also strengthens your influence. People are far more open to correction when they don't feel judged. They are more honest when they don't feel reduced to their mistakes. They are more accountable when they don't feel shamed. And ironically, the more you make space for people to be human, the more they feel inspired to rise to your expectations. So let the behavior be the issue. Let the moment be a moment, not a definition. Correct firmly, guide calmly, but hold the person with dignity. Because when you separate the behavior from the person, you don't just manage conflict, you preserve the relationship. Create a predictable emotional environment. People feel safest when they can predict the emotional climate around them. Children crave it. Adults depend on it more than they admit. A predictable emotional environment doesn't mean every day is perfect. It means your reactions are consistent enough that no one has to walk on eggshells, guess your mood, or wonder which version of you they will encounter today. And this emotional stability becomes one of the strongest foundations for respect. When someone never knows if you will be calm or explosive, patient or irritated, understanding or overwhelmed, their nervous system stays alert. They prepare for impact. They adjust their behavior not out of maturity, but out of self-protection. This is how relationships become tense and unpredictable. But when your emotional presence is steady, when your tone, boundaries, and reactions follow a consistent pattern, others begin to relax around you. They stop scanning for danger. They stop guessing. They start trusting. Predictability is not about being emotionless. It's about being regulated. It means your internal weather doesn't swing wildly with every small disruption. You may feel frustration, disappointment, or fatigue, but you communicate those emotions in a way that does not destabilize the moment. I'm frustrated right now, so let's pause. I need a moment before we continue. These statements create emotional transparency without creating emotional pressure. Children, especially, thrive in this environment. They test boundaries less when the emotional atmosphere is stable. They behave better because they understand the rules of engagement. They feel secure because the adult in the room is not unpredictable. And adults respond similarly. A partner who knows your reactions will be fair becomes more open. A friend who knows your boundaries won't shift with your mood becomes more respectful. Emotional predictability enhances every relationship because it eliminates fear, and fear is the seed of most conflict. This predictability also strengthens your influence. When your reactions are stable, people know that your words have weight. They know that your calm is not temporary and your boundaries are not situational. They start aligning with your emotional tone instead of pulling you into theirs. You become the anchor, the reference point, the steady force that shapes the entire interaction. And here is the deeper truth. The more predictable your emotional environment becomes, the more powerful your presence feels. People instinctively respect what they can rely on. They listen more closely. They hesitate before crossing boundaries. They reflect more deeply on their own behavior because your steadiness gives them a stable mirror to look into. Creating a predictable emotional environment is not about perfection, it's about consistency. It's about choosing steadiness one moment at a time until it becomes the natural tone of your presence. And when that happens, respect doesn't have to be demanded. It grows organically, shaped by the stability you bring into every interaction. A predictable emotional environment is not a gift you give others. It is a gift you give yourself, because it becomes the ground where real connection can grow. Teach respect indirectly through collaboration. Respect is not learned through lectures, warnings, or repeated commands. It is learned through participation, through the feeling of being part of something rather than being controlled by something. Collaboration is one of the most effective and subtle ways to teach respect, because it shifts the dynamic from you versus me to we are working together. And when someone feels included, their resistance naturally softens, their willingness increases, and their understanding deepens. Collaboration doesn't mean giving up authority. It doesn't mean making everything negotiable or letting others dictate the terms. It simply means inviting the other person into the process. Instead of saying, "Do this now," you might say, "Let's figure out the best way to handle this together." Instead of, "Why didn't you finish?" you can ask, "What would help you complete this more smoothly?" These small shifts in language and energy turn moments of conflict into moments of connection. They signal respect without losing structure. They communicate guidance without triggering defensiveness. When children collaborate, they feel valued. They feel capable. They begin developing decision-making skills that lectures can't provide. And because they helped shape the process, they naturally respect the outcome. Adults respond the same way. A partner, a friend, even a co-worker becomes more open and cooperative when they feel their voice is acknowledged rather than dismissed. Collaboration fosters mutual respect because it balances autonomy with guidance. This approach also teaches responsibility in a more effective way. When you collaborate, you're not solving problems for the other person, you're solving them with them. And this shared ownership means they begin to internalize the lessons instead of merely obeying instructions. They start thinking proactively. They become more aware of their choices. They feel trusted, and trust inspires maturity. Collaboration also diffuses tension. When someone is resisting, it's often because they feel controlled or misunderstood. But the moment you invite them into the process, their nervous system relaxes. The emotional barrier drops. The dynamic shifts from opposition to partnership. And respect grows naturally in environments where partnership replaces power struggles. But here is the deeper beauty. Collaboration models the exact behavior you want to see. If you want someone to listen, you show them what listening looks like. If you want cooperation, you offer cooperation. If you want respect, you speak respectfully. This kind of modeling has a far stronger impact than any rule or consequence, because it demonstrates the standard instead of merely describing it. Teaching respect through collaboration is not about giving power away. It's about sharing enough of it that the other person learns how to use theirs wisely. You remain the leader, the guide, the steady presence. But you allow enough space for them to step into the process with you. And through that space, they discover their own capacity to grow, reflect, and contribute. Collaboration doesn't just solve problems. It strengthens relationships. It transforms conflict into connection. And in that connection, respect becomes something that is not demanded, but chosen willingly. Use natural consequences, not emotional punishment. One of the most transformative shifts you can make in any relationship is learning the difference between consequences and punishment. punishment is emotional. It comes from frustration, disappointment, or the desire to assert control. It often leaves the other person feeling attacked rather than guided. Natural consequences, on the other hand, are neutral. They arise directly from the behavior itself, not from your anger. And because they are logical rather than emotional, they teach responsibility without creating fear or resentment. Natural consequences work because they reflect how the real world functions. If someone doesn't prepare, they struggle. If they're careless with something, it may break. If they speak disrespectfully, the conversation pauses. If they ignore a responsibility, a privilege connected to that responsibility is affected. These outcomes aren't punishments. They are simply the realities that follow choices. And when someone learns to connect action with outcome, they grow in maturity, awareness, and self-regulation. Emotional punishment, however, blurs the lesson. It shifts the focus away from the behavior and onto your reaction. The person no longer thinks, "This happened because of my choice." Instead, they think, "This happened because you're upset." And once the lesson becomes about your emotion rather than their behavior, accountability becomes distorted. They may comply, but they won't understand. They may apologize, but they won't internalize the change. They may fear your reaction, but fear never builds respect, only distance. Natural consequences teach quietly. They don't require raised voices or dramatic tones. They don't require emotional intensity. They simply let the person experience the outcome of their choice in a safe, consistent way. And this safety is crucial. When consequences are predictable and fair, the environment feels stable, not threatening. You teach responsibility without damaging trust. You maintain authority without compromising connection. This approach also strengthens your own emotional power. When you rely on natural consequences, you no longer feel the pressure to punish or make a point. You step out of the emotional struggle and into a place of steady leadership. Your job becomes guiding, not controlling. And when you guide calmly, the other person can actually hear the lesson behind the moment. The beauty of natural consequences is that they create self-awareness over time. A child begins to understand that forgetting has a cost. A partner begins to notice that disrespect pauses the interaction. A teenager realizes that effort leads to freedom, while avoidance leads to limits. These realizations don't come from fear, they come from experience. And experience is the most persuasive teacher there is. In the end, natural consequences teach the one lesson that emotional punishment can never deliver. Your choices matter, and you are capable of choosing differently. This is how growth happens, not through fear, but through clarity. Not through force, but through understanding. Not through punishment, but through the steady reality of cause and effect. Strengthen respect through positive reinforcement. It's easy to notice what goes wrong. The raised voice, the rolled eyes, the ignored request. Human attention naturally gravitates toward the disruption, the mistake, the moment that pulls the relationship off balance. But if you look closely at anyone's behavior, child or adult, you will always find small moments where they try, where they soften, where they cooperate without prompting, where they show respect in tiny, easily overlooked ways. And it's in these moments that respect grows strongest, because people repeat the behaviors that make them feel seen. Positive reinforcement is not flattery. It's not exaggeration. It's the quiet acknowledgement of effort in real time without theatrics. I noticed you listened right away. I appreciate how you handled that. Thank you for speaking calmly. These simple recognitions carry more weight than people realize. They remind the other person that their positive behavior matters, that it has real emotional impact, that it shifts the relationship in meaningful ways. And because the human brain is wired to seek connection and approval, these moments of reinforcement become emotional anchors, guiding future behavior more effectively than criticism ever could. Criticism teaches someone what not to do. Reinforcement teaches them what works. And what works becomes the foundation of habit. The more someone feels valued for their efforts, the more they want to show those efforts again. Children respond especially strongly to this because they are still forming their emotional identity. Adults respond to it because everyone, no matter their age, wants to be acknowledged for trying, even when the attempt isn't perfect. Positive reinforcement also builds trust. When someone knows you are not only watching for mistakes, but also noticing progress, they feel emotionally safer with you. They stop bracing themselves for correction and start opening themselves to collaboration. This safety creates a powerful shift. Instead of behaving to avoid a negative reaction, they behave because they feel good doing it. And this internal motivation is what creates long-lasting change. But there is another layer, one that benefits you as much as them. When you intentionally look for what's going right, your own emotional state changes. You become calmer, more patient, more hopeful. You stop seeing the relationship as a series of battles and start seeing it as a dynamic space where improvement is possible. This shift in your internal state strengthens your ability to lead with clarity instead of frustration. And here is the most beautiful part. Positive reinforcement builds a relationship in which respect doesn't feel forced. It becomes mutual, natural, effortless. The other person begins to associate respect with emotional warmth, not tension. They begin to seek connection rather than avoid correction. They begin to show you the version of themselves that grows in environments where effort is acknowledged rather than ignored. Reinforcement doesn't mean you overlook problems. It means you refuse to let problems overshadow progress. It means you understand that change happens not through constant correction, but through gently guiding someone toward the person they are capable of becoming. When you strengthen respect through positive reinforcement, you transform behavior at its root, not by demanding change, but by nurturing it. Model reflective communication after conflict. What happens after a conflict often matters more than what happened during it. Moments of tension reveal our emotional edges, our triggers, our instincts, our fears. But it's what we do afterward that shapes how the relationship heals and how respect is rebuilt. Reflective communication is the quiet, intentional act of revisiting the moment, not to assign blame or reopen wounds, but to show maturity, humility, and leadership in the aftermath. This kind of communication is subtle. It doesn't sound like a lecture or a speech. It sounds like presence. It sounds like, I took a moment to think about earlier, and here's what I realized. When you speak this way, you're not just addressing the conflict. You're modeling the emotional skills you hope the other person will develop. Self-awareness, accountability, and calm reconstruction of the moment. Children learn this quickly when they see it. Adults feel it deeply, even if they don't respond right away. Because reflective communication removes the emotional power struggle and replaces it with honesty. It shows that you are not controlled by the intensity of the moment, that you can step outside yourself, observe your own behavior, and articulate what happened with clarity and compassion. And this kind of leadership invites the other person to meet you in that space, not from fear, but from trust. Reflective communication also prevents emotional residue from building up. Conflicts that are never revisited leave behind subtle layers of misunderstanding. One person assumes one thing, the other assumes another, and slowly those assumptions harden into distance. But when you revisit the moment with a calm tone and grounded presence, you dissolve the tension before it calcifies. You show the other person that conflict is not a threat. It's a doorway to deeper understanding. And here's where the real power lies. When you reflect out loud, you help the other person understand why something was hurtful or unproductive without shaming them. You're not saying you were wrong. You're saying, here's how the moment felt, and here's what I hope we can do differently next time. This opens the mind instead of shutting it down. It teaches without wounding. It guides without overpowering. Most importantly, reflective communication builds emotional safety. When the people around you know that mistakes won't lead to punishment or silent resentment, they become more honest, more open, more willing to repair what was broken. They stop hiding. They stop defending. They start participating in the healing process because you've shown them what healing looks like in real time. In the long run, this is what creates mature relationships. Relationships where conflict is not avoided, but navigated. Where misunderstandings become opportunities to strengthen connection. Where the aftermath of tension becomes a place of growth, not guilt. And here's the deeper truth. By modeling reflective communication, you teach others how to handle their own conflicts. With themselves, with others, with life. You give them a blueprint for emotional responsibility, not through pressure, but through presence. When you show someone how to reflect, you show them how to grow. And growth, more than anything else, is the foundation of lasting respect.